May be seated. All right, we are now on case number 11-252, the State of Ohio, ex rel. Ohio Attorney General versus Shelley Holding Company. For the appellant, Ms. Bott.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices, good morning. And may it please the court, on behalf of the Shelley appellants, my name is April Bott. At this time, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, and the amicus will not present this morning. Your Honors, this case presents the question of whether the state should be held to its traditional civil burden of proof under Ohio law so that Ohio's businesses, large and small, have certainty. The answer is yes. And should this court decide to lower this burden of proof to what the state wants, which is an inference of a violation, this court must then determine whether or not a defendant has a constitutional right to present evidence to rebut the state's case. Again, the answer is yes. The propositions of law presented here will impact regulated businesses throughout every corner of Ohio. In addition, the import of this case transcends air pollution law and hits core issues of jurisprudence. Here, because the state did not prove its case at trial, the 10th District lowered the burden of proof and established new standards that cannot and should not be the law of Ohio. As such, a declaration from this court as to the law of Ohio is paramount to our businesses and to Shelley itself. Your Honors, the civil burden of proof rests with the plaintiff. And Ohio's environmental statutes require that a plaintiff show, by a preponderance of the evidence, that a violation occurred for each and every day for which the plaintiff seeks a penalty. Specifically, Ohio's air law at Revised Code 370406 expressly states that courts may impose penalties only upon a showing of each violation. Showing is a standard legal term that's defined as the act of establishing through evidence or proof. In this case, however, the 10th District established a new, much lower standard than the traditional preponderance of the evidence civil burden of proof. It established that the plaintiff state does not have to show any evidence of any ongoing violation, and instead that the trial court must infer that a violation is continuing of nature once the state shows one single day of violation. Here the state admits it can only show and make a showing with evidence that Shelley's asphalt facilities exceeded permit limits on a single day based on the results of 1 3-hour discrete SAC test. However, as the state concedes in its brief to this court at page 6, the proof of the one-day violation was documented while each asphalt plant was running at absolute possible worst-case condition upon worst-case condition, using the highest emitting fuels possible, using the highest emitting materials possible, running at full steam, and using max output conditions.
Can I ask you about that? Is your position that the statute does not require the state to test at maximum levels? Because as I read your brief, you indicate that Shelley does not typically operate at maximum capacity. So does the statute require that the test be at maximum output or what you normally operate at?
Your Honor, the statute is silent to that point. The permit itself states that the testing should be done at maximum operating conditions. However, the distinction is that for testing purposes, it's done at worst-case possible scenario upon worst-case possible scenario. However, the rules of evidence allow you to demonstrate through any evidence that your facility doesn't run day-to-day after the test at a condition like the max operating conditions.
And if I understand the state's position, then when they do this test, then they maintain they have the right to assess the fine, and the fine continues. Even if you remedied everything the next day, the fine would continue until they are able to schedule the next test, which they concede is a lengthy process of weeks or months even to get a second test. That's their position. Is that correct?
Your Honor, that's absolutely correct, and that defies common sense. That absolutely defies common sense, especially when the state itself has conceded that they have a lack of inspectors, they have trouble scheduling tests, testing is expensive, and it sometimes takes
months.
And
if you were to call them and say, we've fixed everything you complained about the next day, can you come out and verify it, or can you stop our fine? What would their response be?
Your Honor, I don't want to speak for the state, but having done this for almost 2 decades, I can tell you that you are required to have a 30-day notice. So at least a 30-day notice before. And in practice, and as there is testimony at trial, it takes much longer, usually, than 30 days.
So under their scenario, it would be a minimum of 30 days fine.
Correct.
If we adopt their proposition.
And they're asking for the maximum of $25,000 per day for that fine.
Could you do your own test? So the next day, if you are not emitting at maximum levels, or if you corrected the problem, could you do your own test and have that as evidence when the fine were applied?
Justice, the test is actually performed by the defendant under the watchful eye of Ohio EPA. Mm-hmm. So the stack testing under the maximum conditions were done. At trial, there was testimony from three different witnesses and also evidence that demonstrated that the testing conditions did not continue after the dates of the stack test. And that evidence was deemed compelling, in fact, by the trial court, overlooked completely by the 10th District.
Well, let me follow up on Justice McGee-Brown's question. Did you put in evidence that there is a difference between operating at maximum conditions and what you normally do? Is there evidence in the record to that effect?
Your Honor, the answer is yes to that. However, it wasn't our burden to do that. In fact, we did do that through three sets of witness testimony and evidence. However, the burden is with the state, in fact, to prove that every day subsequent to the statute.
I understand, but I'm just trying to understand what's in the record, because part of your argument is, well, if we have to do this other burden, we should be able to rebut it with evidence. And
absolutely.
I guess my question goes to the second part. Do you have evidence that of an actual test that if under your normal operating conditions it meets all the requirements?
Your Honor, not an actual stack test. In three of these facilities, we actually asked for different permit limits, so there were not tests. But, however, there was evidence of changes in fuels, evidence and changes of operational parameters, fixes at the plants, permit changes.
And do you have evidence that that actually resolved the issue?
The trial court
just made changes and maybe hope it does, or we should presume that it does.
And again, Your Honor, the burden rests with the plaintiff to prove that case.
I understand. I'm just trying to find out what's in the record.
Yeah, and the record was deemed compelling by the trial court in that regard with respect to that evidence.
But your argument is that this is a continuing violation. Is that what you're arguing to us? And you have to pay a fine every day until the state comes back for another test?
No, Your Honor. Our argument is that the state has the burden to prove the continuing violation. That burden rests with the state as plaintiff to show each day a violation for which they seek a penalty. Our argument has always been and consistently.
So your point is that if, in fact, you exceeded limits on a single day, that is the only penalty that ought to be assessed.
That is correct.
So how do we write the law to say that?
Your Honor, you don't need to rewrite the law. The law is already there to say that. The law states that the plaintiff must carry their burden of proof. There are two cases that demonstrate that the state is able to do this already.
Do we simply say that there is no continuing violation?
No, Your Honor. What it says is in order for the plaintiff to carry its burden of proof, they must make a showing for each day for which they seek a violation under 370406. They can do that, as they did in the Thermaltron case out of the 10th District, by showing that we have evidence testimony that shows operations were consistent as they were during the stack test, using the same fuels, using the same operational parameters, using the same input capacity. The state put on that evidence in Thermaltron. They also refer to a federal case, Hoagie Lumber, where the state did exactly the same thing under a lower burden of proof. The state has the burden to carry for each day they seek a violation. In Thermaltron and Hoagie, they did exactly that. What they said is, in these cases, we have evidence from experts that state that these conditions that were present during the stack test continued throughout until the compliant stack test. Here, the state chose not to put on that evidence. That's the clear distinction between Hoagie and Thermaltron in this case, Your Honor.
All right. Your second proposition of law says if a continuing violation of permit terms can be inferred, a permit holder must be given the opportunity to rebut the inference.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But you said you have that opportunity.
Your Honor, we had that opportunity at the trial court. However, based on the 10th District's holding and the 10th District's instructions to the trial court, the 10th District has completely taken away the trial court's discretion to look at any evidence but for stack test, continuing violation. Under that premise of law, Your Honor, every day that we are between this date number one, and date number 180, let's just hypothetically, we're in violation. If Shelley doesn't operate its plants in the interim, they still are charged a fine. That defies common sense. Unfortunately, the 10th District made it so clear to the trial court, there is no discretion, trial court. Stack test, continuing violation.
And
that cannot be the law.
In this case, the trial court went through exhaustive exhibits, a 100-page opinion going day by day by day. And are you contending that the 10th District applied more than an abuse of discretion standard, that they looked at it as a legal issue and not as a fact-based issue?
Your Honor, it was very short-shrifted in the 10th District, so it's hard for us to determine. They certainly did not look, nor did they use the words manifest against the manifest weight of the evidence. The trial court used the words compelling as far as Shelley's defense. The 10th District ignored that completely. Your Honors, I see that I need time for rebuttal, so thank you very much.
Ms. Schumer.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the Court. I want to establish two points at the outset. First, what the violation is here, and then how the violation period is measured. Shelley fundamentally misunderstands the violation here, the permit violation, and what permit compliance means. Compliance is not just about staying below emissions limits whenever they are operating. Compliance means passing the stress test that the permit requires, meaning demonstrating that they have a facility in a sufficiently good state of health and repair such that it can stay within the limits while operating at maximum capacity. A very simple illustration makes this point. Think about elevators. Compliance isn't just about the elevator carrying under the weight limit when it goes up and down doing its normal business. Everybody would agree compliance is also about that elevator demonstrating periodically that it is in a certain state of repair, a state of repair that is gauged and legally verified by whether it can pass the maximum load test that its permit requires. That is the violation we are talking about here. This is a case about permit requirements. It's not a case about common law evidentiary standards. You are refereeing a permit violation.
Then let me be sure I understand what was the penalty then. You established the stress test, said they were in violation. If they, in fact, had shut the plant down the next day and kept it closed for 30 days and you had another stress test 45 days later, what is the fine?
The fine would not run from test to test. The standard we're asking the court to recognize is that a failed test means that a violation runs until compliance is shown again, except, and this is where the rebuttable presumption comes in, except to the extent that the operator can show days that it didn't operate, which is your example, Your Honor.
Okay, let's take a different scenario then. They showed that they operated below that stress test for those 30 days, and then you had another stress test. That's not sufficient?
Unless they can show that they fixed a problem so that they would be capable of passing the stress test, that doesn't fix the problem, because our allegation here is not that you should use the failed stress test as a proxy for their exceeding emissions limits on subsequent days. Our argument is that the stress test is an independent requirement in the permit, and so you should...
So your argument is if they can run the stacks at maximum speed with maximum everything to create this violation, unless they fix it so they can never run it again at that maximum and violate their assessed fine.
It's exactly like the elevator example, Your Honor. Yes, the argument is that you need to show that you can pass the test.
So the answer to that question is yes.
Yes.
They have to actually show that they can never run it at that maximum. That's what you claim is the requirement of proof.
I'm not sure I was understanding your question, but I can try to clarify it. But
let me ask the question. Sure. You say that when they fail the test, they have to fix the plant so that they can never fail the test again in the next period. Otherwise, there's a presumption that they are still out of compliance and they still get a fine.
Yes.
Even if they are operating at less.
Even if they are operating at less.
Can they prove that they are operating at less even though they haven't fixed the maximum problem?
But operating, they can show nothing that they say about operating at less would mean anything. It's like saying there's only one person going up and down the elevator. If you can't pass the diagnostic test, the stress test, then you're out of compliance with that requirement until you show
what
you can pass
that test. What is the relevance of the maximum capacity diagnostic test? What is the relevance of that?
Sure. There are a lot of reasons, Your Honor. First of all, it's what the permit says, and therefore it's a requirement.
Pardon me?
First of all, that's what the permit requires, and we don't think think that courts are free to read into it another method of showing compliance. Two, the federal government establishes the testing protocols for all the states, and this is one of the testing protocols that the federal government establishes. And one of the reasons that it does that is because, functionally, this is one of the best tests that there is and one of the best means of environmental regulation, and frankly, one of the least intrusive means for the regulated community.
So is it basically the theory that if you're going to pass the test at this high stress maximum capacity, then if you, as is normally done and widely accepted, operate your facility at a much lower level, there's a guarantee that you won't be polluting?
That's exactly what it is, Your Honor. It says if we know that you can pass this test, we know you're good all the way down.
And then the converse is true, that if you fail the test at the maximum level, then there's a presumption that you are failing the test every single day, even if you don't operate at that. So you are fined for doing something you could possibly do but are not doing.
Well, I think in some cases it might be true that the failed test indicates that you're exceeding the emissions limits on subsequent days. But in this case, it's very important to look at what the actual violation was that the state was talking about. The state brought a violation. The prohibited acts under this air law are under 370405 of the revised code. 370405B makes it a violation to exceed emissions limitations that are set out in the permit. We didn't sue under B. We didn't sue for exceeding emissions limitations. That's not the continuing violation we are alleging. We sued under subsection C, which is broader and says no permit holder shall violate any permit term or condition. And the permit term we are talking about here is the term that says within 120 days of setting up your shop, you have to be able to pass the stress test. It is true, Justice Stratton, that sometimes that stress test will reveal that emissions are being exceeded even lower at lower level, 70% or 50%. But usually what it means is emissions are linear. If you're exceeding more than you should be at 100, you're exceeding more than you should be at 50, even if what you're exceeding at that 50% level may be less than the maximum. We still care about inefficiencies.
But, Ms. Sherman, it's not the actual – the point is that there were no emissions that were actually exceeded for every single day, correct? That's talking about a design, if you want to look at it as a design defect from your point of view.
Exactly, Your Honor. We're talking about this is a stress test that is required by these permits because they're there to gauge the health of this machine.
Does the statute, with respect to the $25,000 penalty per day, does it apply equally to emissions violations where, understandably, if a company is polluting in excess for a day, mm-hmm. it deserves the penalty for the day. Here you're talking about a design defect, and you're saying even if the design is the stress test hasn't been met, even if the design is deficient in your view, until it's actually proven to be changed, that is a continuing violation.
It is
the permit to install, PTI, right?
It is, Your Honor, because the penalty provision applies with equal force to violations under 370405C as it would to excessive emissions. And so we care about plants not operating in a state of being broken because we care about that for health and environmental reasons. You don't want a plant that's operating at 20% capacity exceeding proportionally more than it would be exceeding if it were a healthy plant that could have passed its stress test. We care about that for health and environmental reasons. We're not talking about lawnmowers here. We're talking about plants whose toxic emissions are measured in tons per year. We also care about it for reasons relating to wanting to be reasonable with respect to the regulated community, Your Honors. It is only by knowing that a plant is in physically fit shape that we can make reasonable inferences about what the actual emissions are at lower levels, and it is using those inferences about actual emissions that allow us to be reasonable in setting emissions limitations.
So we have a $350,000 penalty that we're talking about here?
We're not actually talking about a $350,000 penalty. The state in this case was seeking $25 to $50 per day for these violations, literally 0.1.
$25 per day, you said?
$25 per day, literally 0.1 to 0.2% of the total maximum penalty. And literally $25 to $50 is about the cost of what it would cost to replace what are called Nomax bags in the baghouse, which are the things that are usually broken when you have too much particulate matter coming out. So it was pretty much an at-cost request. And again, Ohio EPA, the Ohio Attorney General, isn't imposing these fines. This is all tempered through a court. And so going back to a question Justice Stratton asked earlier, it is not the case that you measure a violations period from failed test to successful test. It is true Ohio EPA needs to come in and confirm that that plant is fixed, but this is a rebuttable presumption. It is in the operator's hands to stop the clock, and they can and they do all the time. They can bring in evidence that the plant was fixed. They can bring in evidence that they shut down that stack in the intervening period before it was fixed. They can bring in evidence of their own self-test, and Shelley has its own mobile stack testing equipment. They can bring in evidence of
a third-party
test.
They claim they did that, and the trial judge found in their favor.
No, they didn't. No, Your Honor. They only brought all the only evidence that they put on was basically a legal argument that involved one fact. The fact was our normal operations are something below what the stress test is. They didn't bring in evidence that they had fixed.
So what were the 100 pages of analysis analyzing?
That's literally what it was. We're talking
One test?
It's literally it was literally all the trial court found was you have sufficiently demonstrated that you operate at something below the maximum. There was no evidence of shutdown days. There was no evidence that the machinery was fixed such that it could pass the test. There wasn't any evidence of any of that. Now, I will say we don't have any opposition. If the court affirms, and we hope you will, we don't have any opposition to the court sending this case back to the trial court on remand to reopen the record for the court to accept evidence of days of non-operation, the evidence that Shelley did not put on because it was pursuing a normal operations defense, which, again, is irrelevant for the reasons why telling how much somebody weighed going up and down the elevator is irrelevant to whether your elevator needs to be shut down.
Counsel,
because it can't pass the test.
This was a hot mix plant, right?
Right.
And I don't know, from day to day, the production, do the inputs vary? In other words, is the mixture of what's going in and therefore being heated the effluent coming out the stacks will be the same compounds day in and day out, or does that vary depending on what the job is?
It does sometimes vary, Your Honor.
So when you do your maximum stress test, does the state know what is the most obnoxious mix that could be employed in this plant? And let's see, run
generally
that
the state-
through.
Yeah, generally the state does. But let me emphasize, too, that when we test at the maximum, it is what is referred to as a practical maximum. It's not actually worst case, this is crazy, this would never happen. It's actually a practical maximum, and it is a maximum that the parties themselves provide input for. They send in to EPA a notice of intent to test that.
So would this production facility have the opportunity, either through its own stress test or whatever, to show on most days this is the witch's brew that is going through this plant and not what was done on the test day? And if you use what we do most days and we keep records of what we do day in and day out, can they knock it down by
Your Honor,
providing that?
That would be a defense if our claim was that they were exceeding the emissions limits on the subsequent days. But our claim is this is the test that the permit requires. This is a question about a permit violation. It's in black and white in the permit. It says you have to test at this level. If you don't, you are out of compliance. And our view is you should assume, it's really actually very simple, you should assume that they are out of compliance with their requirement to pass that test until they show they can pass it.
That's the whole problem. It's the assumption that they're out of compliance without evidence that they're out of compliance. And they're simply arguing, I think you've assessed more than 2,900 days of penalty days?
I suspect that those actual days are probably less if they were to have put in evidence of days of non-operation, Your Honor. But our point,
I understand your argument, it's $50 a day is what you were seeking at 2,900 days, something in that range?
Comes out to about $72,000 to $145,000 of total penalties, which is actually less than what 145 is the max end of our spectrum of what we had proposed to the trial court, which is actually less than what the maximum will be if you had just only counted 9 days of failed tests at the
maximum level. But the argument is that you are either assuming that they're out of compliance or wanting a statutory presumption that they're out without having any evidence other than on the one day when it was performed, when a test was performed at what would be maximum output.
Your Honor, I think if you look at it from the opposite perspective, it will appear that the opposite is actually what I think the unreasonable inference is. We are saying they have a requirement to pass the test. They failed that test. They are out of compliance with that standard, meaning the standard that they have to pass the test. The text we are looking to is 370406C, which says penalties shall be assessed per day. It speaks in per day terms. It's not they are not words of a snap test. They are words that assume have the General Assembly assuming that a meter will be ticking daily until compliance is shown again, meaning until they show that they can pass that test. What Shelley wants you to infer, they want you to hold that if they fail a stack test today, if they show they're incapable of failing of passing that stress test, you should assume that they are back in compliance magically when the sun comes up the next morning, even though they've done nothing to show that they've fixed their plant and they've fixed the machinery in a way that would permit them to pass the test that the permit requires.
Although, Ms. Shermer, aren't they saying that to get a second day, you have to show that they were unable to meet the potential, or the potential to emit was exceeded the second day, that, and the third day, and the fourth day.
Well, they're saying we would have to show that they're not able to pass the stress test again the subsequent days. And to that, we would say, if that's really true, that is no enforcement standard at all, because you have drained any incentive out of the company to fix. What more do we have to show if we test on day one? I'd also say for the regulated community, Your Honors, this is really terrible. If they're really saying, as they are, that the state has to come and prove the violation anew each day, you're going to have seriatim daily stack testing. Ohio EPA will show up every day and say, good morning, it is test day again, which shuts down regular operations at the plant.
So are you saying the burden was on them then to prove that they were in compliance the next day if they're alleging the next day or this third day or fourth day?
Yes, Your Honor. The burden is on them. Show us you tuned your burner. Show us you swapped out. You bought the $25 bag and you changed the bag. Show us you shut down your plant. Until you fixed it. There are all sorts of
what opportunity did they have procedurally to bring that to your attention if, in fact, they had done that?
Well, again, all of this is tempered through a court. So they had the opportunity in the trial court to put on as much evidence as they wanted of the days that it was shut down, the days they might have replaced bags or tuned burners. We would want the trial court to deduct those days from the total days of the penalties.
What opportunity do they have to do that administratively so that they can stay out of court?
It doesn't really kick in administratively because these are penalties that are under the enforcement scheme, which are under the civil injunction and civil penalty statute, which all take place in the court.
If you do the stack test and you find they're out of compliance, they literally have to go to court in order to show that they've made these other changes so that they aren't out of compliance?
No, again, Your Honor, remember, this is an enforcement action that the state of Ohio brought. So we're saying if we are going to a point where we are seeking penalties against them, then their burden of rebuttal is...
I understand that. I guess I'm trying to get to the point before the enforcement action starts so that I can understand the enforcement action.
Oh, sure. They would just have to show us that they can pass the test, show us that something was fixed, and we would never sue.
If they came back and gave you 30 days' notice and asked for a test, a retesting, and they passed, and they provided to you documentation, the fact that we fixed this bag, we've tuned up this burner, we've done this, that, and the other thing, and we did that 3 days after you were out here for the first testing, lo and behold, your subsequent test verifies that we've done all this stuff, they'd have 3 days of penalty, and you wouldn't proceed with a enforcement action. Is that correct?
It's even better than three. It's zero penalties. We're only talking about penalty world when we are filing a lawsuit. If they fix it before they've prompted the EPA in the state of Ohio to file a lawsuit, then they're just back into compliance. And that's the way the agency always works. We just want these parties to get back into compliance. We're not looking to rack up fines and rack up penalties. And if I could, I see my time is up, Your Honor. But
it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'd ask the court to affirm.
Ms. Bott, you have a little over 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to start by saying I'm very frustrated by what I just heard from the state, saying that all we have to do after a stack test is show something changed. Let me tell you about what we showed the trial court when we weren't given the opportunity to show to Ohio EPA before they sued us for $25,000 per day. The statement that they're saying...
Let's stop there a moment.
Sure.
Why weren't you given the opportunity administratively to show that you resolved the issues that created the problem?
Your Honor, in fact, we did. And the evidence at the trial court and the evidence produced by three witnesses and testimony showed exactly that. Let me run through some of them. We changed fuels after the stack test. We weren't running on the same fuels. We were running on less emitting fuels. We changed operational conditions. We fixed the plants. We didn't run in the winter months. We didn't run 7 days a week. We didn't run using the same raw materials. Those were all in written documents back to the agency years before this case saw the light of day with Judge Schneider. And the fact that the other frustrating point is that
Were they deemed on subsequent testing to be inadequate fixes?
Your Honor, in the subsequent stack tests, we in fact passed. So the changes, then when you went back to max conditions under those circumstances, were in fact passing tests. And in some cases, the state also alleged.
But Ms. Shermer just told us that after you come back into compliance, they don't go to these penalty days.
And, Your Honor, I would say just look at the record in this case to say that that is untrue. And as to the fact of $25,000 a day versus 25 and the reasonableness of the state, as our brief points out, the state files in the past 5 years 550 of these cases. They ask for the civil maximum against Shelley, $25,000 per day per violation. It's up to the discretion of the trial court at that point. They ask for the statutory maximum.
Is that in this record?
Your Honor, it is in this record.
Where would I find that?
Count 7 and then the request for relief in their complaint itself. Per
Can
day
you go
per
back
violation.
A little? So you found not to be in compliance with the permit.
Correct.
Then you present evidence to EPA demonstrating that you have remedied this and that you're in compliance. When did that occur, roughly?
Your Honor, that was in the record, and these stack tests occurred over a period of 2 or 3 years because there are 5 different tests. But that is done fairly quickly. The notices of violation were only sent out in 3 of the facilities. The responses are required within 30 days, and that is all in the record in the trial court below.
And within those 30 days, you came into compliance?
Within those 30 days, we provided the state with justification of why those operating maximum conditions were not day-to-day operations of the
plant.
And
that's where, so that's where the argument is. And I want to be very clear because I hear two things. One, you say we got directly in compliance, but a lot of your brief was spent on saying, but we don't operate at maximum compliance, so we should be judged on what our normal daily operating output is. And what I hear the state saying is that when you get a permit, you get a permit that's based on maximum capacity. So when you say within 30 days we demonstrated to the state, did you demonstrate that you were in compliance at maximum capacity, or did you present evidence that you didn't operate at maximum capacity?
Your Honor, the reason for the distinction is the difference between the legal argument and the factual argument, which the trial court found compelling.
But what does the permit, though, isn't it based on maximum capacity?
The permit is an emission limit. The testing method is based on a maximum operating capacity. The violation brought in count 7 was a violation of a permit limit, not a stack testing method, which was an incorrect statement of the state, and it's in count 7 of the complaint. This is an issue of an emissions violation. What this state is asking you to do is, look, we hit this once at this absolute maximum worst case potential of this facility.
Which is what you have to do in order to have a permit.
That is absolutely correct under the test method. However, what they're saying is if you hit it here, every court has to assume ongoing then we operate the same way with the same violation. There's an assumption. What we're saying to you is that assumption does not exist in law. There is no support in law. There's no support in case law.
But you want to say, we didn't meet the mark for the permit test that was done by the EPA, yet give us a break because we don't operate at that high maximum. So there should not be an inference that we are in violation because we can show you that we operate much lower. But it's kind of like an ongoing violation, and the fact that you operate at this level or that level doesn't cure the fact that at the maximum level you can't pass.
Your Honor, that what it shows is on that specific day, under that specific set of scenarios, which their own witness, Robert Hodenbosey, testified, can't be recreated. It's just a snapshot on a particular day with ambient conditions.
You did nothing to fix the performance of Shelley at a maximum capacity.
Your Honor, no. The record shows that, in fact, in some cases, we did. There was a number of changes. In some cases, we asked for permit limit changes, which the state has said is acceptable. But the distinction is, first, the state's got to show and carry its burden. That's got to come first on a liability.
Are you requesting us to say that the EPA has to go out there and once a week or every day or whatever do testing continuously?
No, Your Honor, and thank you for asking that question. I wanted to make that point, which is exactly, again, what the state said. The Hoagie and Thermotron cases tell you that's not true. Once a stack test establishes the violation, regardless of whether we use state law under 370406 or whether we use the Clean Air Act standard, two things must happen. First, a violation must be shown. Then the state must also show that this violation was likely to have continued. They have two things that they must show, even under the lower Clean Air Act standard. They ignore this whole second prong. They don't show that it's likely to have continued. They just say the stack test is it. Once we hit that stack test, you're done. You must shut down, and you're assumed to be in violation.
And you can produce evidence and did produce evidence at the trial court that would negate their second prong there about the likelihood of its continuing, because Shelley took immediate action to cure whatever was wrong.
That is correct, Your Honor. And again, the burden is with them to show this likelihood. In both Hoagie and Thermotron, the plaintiffs show that, back to Your Honor's question about do we have to have the state go out and do stack test after stack test after stack test. That's absurd. No. They can show with any evidence, any scintilla of evidence, whether it's operating logs, whether it's heat rates, whether it's production information, whether it's fuels. And by the way, all of this was turned over to them in discovery. They didn't put on that case. They could have. In Thermotron, they did. And in the Hoagie case, the federal case, in which I was the prosecutor for the state, that case was put on in the state's prima facie case, in the state's initial burden of proof. It's their job to show violation, some other evidence, not stack test, violation, some other evidence.
Ms. Bacow,
counsel,
I'm
not sure I've ever heard oral arguments in which the opposing parties are so diametrically oppose or have opposite characterizations of both the law and the evidence. I'm assuming if we read the permit, we'll be able to determine what you are required to do and whether or not the permit itself required you to be in compliance with the stack test until another test was done, as the state indicates, or that all you have to do is to show that you've made some substantive changes that might resolve the problem, and then there's no fine, assuming you pass the next stack test or something. Would we be able to determine that from reading the permit?
Your Honor, no. The answer is no, not from the permit.
I was afraid that might be the answer.
and I can tell you why, though. I can tell you there's an emission limit for each of the pollutants in the permit. I can tell you that there's a testing method to show under max conditions the method of testing. Those are the two correlations in the permit. However, a permit can't override the General Assembly. And here the General Assembly, and if we want to use the Clean Air Act standard, Congress said, however, once you hit this violation, then you can use any evidence. First of all, the state has to carry its burden to show.
You're challenging the permit itself.
Well, the permit.
Conditions of the permit itself. Is that the basis of this?
The permit is a contract. It can't override revised code, and it can't override
the
Congress.
Is the answer yes or no?
The answer is yes.
Ms. Bott,
thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Bott, it seems that the potential to emit is a design standard that is part of your permit to install. That's one thing. And that's what I heard Ms. Schirmer talking about. The design is a different matter than the actual emissions. And it seems like you're talking about emissions that exceed a certain standard, which then are likely to continue and can be day-to-day. But it seems like we're talking about two different types of regulation here and the mixing of the two. If we looked at it just as a point of, well, every day it exceeds a certain standard, I see your point. However, Ms. Schirmer's talking about the actual design that's incorporated within the permit itself, which gives a standard that may likely not even be an operational standard.
And, Your Honor, to that point, what I would say is the permit sets out the applicable limits for each pollutant. And let's use a hypothetical of 25 pounds a day. That's the permit limit. That's what's called an allowable. When you stack test at maximum operating conditions, which are worst upon worst upon worst upon worst, which is your potential. And so if it's above here, you still have to prove, and it's the state's burden to prove, even up here at a potential, the allowable was not exceeded or was exceeded every day thereafter. It was likely to have continued. That is the state's burden, and that's what they're required to do. So if you test at 26, using worst upon worst upon worst, and your permit limit is 25, but then you have compelling testimony that says we switched fuels, we switched operations, we lowered our plant's maximum throughput,
but
to be under this.
That's where I'm getting caught up in your argument, because if we accept your theory that it should be based on what you normally do as output, then how does the state ever know you're in compliance with the environmental regulations? Because if you can't pass the maximum test and your defense is that, well, this is our daily output, at any other day you could change that output and go to max, be in violation of the environmental standards, and the state doesn't have the manpower to continually come back every day to see that you're only hitting operational standards.
And, Your Honor, we're not asking for that. What we're asking for is that the law remains consistent with Hoagie and Thermaltron and the law as it's written, which is once the violation is demonstrated, the state can use any evidence. You heard the state's counsel say the evidence of changed bags, evidence of different fuels, evidence of different ambient conditions. The state's burden is nothing other than a preponderance of the evidence burden to show that likelihood continued. That's a very standard civil burden of proof. We're not asking for this massive, they must come out and stack test and throw all their resources towards it. What we're saying is, look, there is a host of things that can change operational parameters at the plant. Their own witness, their own top air official said that. A stack test is merely a snapshot. It cannot be used to show, and it's not indicative of day-to-day. But they want a day-to-day fine against our company.
Counsel, in listening to all of this, and knowing my colleagues, and it seems to me that part of this argument, a good part of this argument, revolves around policy and enforcement issues that can only be driven by the governor and the governor's appointee, the head of the EPA. And what we have to decide are some fairly narrow legal issues. And I'm trying to distill this down, but the state says, look, we do try to be reasonable. And these plants emit a lot of pollution. They do it pursuant to a permit. If I understand your argument, in response to what happened here, part of the resolution as to what's happening today has been improvements in the plant, improvements in the operation, and in part the good graces of the state to permit you to emit more at some of the facilities that are in question. Is that a summary of what's happened subsequent?
Along with changes in operational parameters, changes in fuels, changes in raw materials.
So a lot's going on, give and take, between your client and the EPA. What the state has argued is we try to be reasonable in discussing a fine that the judge actually found. And you're saying, oh, yes, but they had to hire me or other lawyers to knock that down to a reasonable level because what they came after was debilitating to our industry. Is that correct? So where you're far apart is what they sought and what the trial court ended up with. And in terms of how we resolve this, if we agree with the state that the only practical way to determine violations is to crank it up to the outer limits, and if you pass that, then it's reasonable to assume you can't exceed that ever. So they've chosen that as a reasonable way of testing, and it seems like a lot of the dispute is to how do we get through the part that Justice Kupp wanted to talk about of they do the test, you have a violation. How do you work that out without ending up in court with the state seeking the maximum? But Ms. Schimmer here with a nice smile saying, we don't really mean to break this industry. We simply want them to clean up their act.
Your Honor, a precedent issue to penalty is liability. That's what we're asking this court. The liability is with the plaintiff to prove. Here, 370406 requires a legal showing. That's what we're asking of this court. Hold them to their legal standard. If you don't, you will cripple
and
business throughout the state.
And it's the second point of the legal standard where you say they come up short.
It is the second. Well, it is the showing portion, Your Honor. It is their burden under Ohio law for them to show that the violation continued after the date of the stack test. They did not put on a scintilla of evidence to demonstrate that. In Hoagie Lumber, the plaintiff, State of Ohio, did. In Thermaltron, the plaintiff, State of Ohio, did.
Well, could they, let me ask it this way. If they do the stack test and it's way over, how much do they have to show then to the trial court to say it's reasonable, assume even under normal operations they couldn't get it in compliance versus it's a tick over?
And, Your Honor, that's a good question, and that is a question for the informed discretion of the trial court weighing evidence. They didn't put on that evidence of it's a tick over or it's 10,000 ticks over. That is their burden to show. All they said was, on this day, under these discrete facts, during this 3 hours, in this little tiny box, we have a violation. We don't know what happened anywhere else, so we want you guys to tell us we can infer a continuing violation. That is not the law. The law says showing. Thank you, Your Honors.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.